Okay, good evening, everybody. Welcome, April 13th, starting a few minutes late. I apologize. We are in our third pre-Pesach class for the Denver Kehillah. We had one on Pesach cleaning, and last week we discussed elements of the Haggadah. And today we're going to discuss a very interesting approach to the overall structure of the Haggadah. So what I'd like to start by looking at a source sheet that will give us the opportunity to understand the structure, and then we'll look at it sort of in a diagram fashion. That's what I was looking for earlier, and then we'll talk about, as I sort of tantalizingly mentioned last week, maybe elements of the Haggadah that can be skipped, or just at least conceptual ways to not feel totally 100% bound to the Magid that as it's presented in the Haggadah. Although every element of the Haggadah is precious and has so much to teach us, there are often just practical reasons why it may not work for us to go through the entire Haggadah word for word. So as I mentioned last week also, this approach is based on a shiur that I read by Rav Shimon Gesundheit. And I think what drew me to the shiur, besides the genius of it, was his incredibly interesting last name. But it is a well-known rabbinic family, the Gesundheit rabbinic family. And actually what I can do is here's the shiur. I could post it in the chat. So if you guys want to just access it yourself, you click on the link, it'll open it in your browser, and then you'll be able to. Oh, I can't do it if I'm sharing the screen. Let me stop the share for a second. And then you could open it up and save it for yourself and have the opportunity to review it when we're done. But we're going to go through the elements, some of the elements of that idea now, and show that the Haggadah is really four Haggadot in one. Okay, that's the point that Rabbi Gesundheit tries to make in the Shiur, that the Haggadah is really four Haggadot in one. So, and the elements of the Haggadah that he mentions are question, answer, thanksgiving. The answer is really, so you have the question, then you have the answer, then you have thanksgiving and praise. Okay. So we're going to go through, we're going to see the elements and how they appear four times in the Seder. Just it's important to note that certainly we understand that telling the story must be present in all four of these Haggadot within the Haggadah, because that's the central mitzvah of the Seder, is to tell the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim. So all of them are going to include an element of telling the story. All of them are also going to include praise and thanks. And over here, if you look on the screen, I offered a I took a passage from Rabbi Soloveitchik, where he discusses, as I mentioned on Shabbat, one of the differences between the daily obligation to remember Yitziat Mitzrayim and the yearly obligation to tell the story. And he says the obligation of remembering does not impose on the person the obligation of praise and thanks. By contrast, the commandment of reciting the story obligates us not only to tell of the wonders and the miracles that God performed, but also to praise and thank him. Therefore, it is our duty to thank, praise, and that is the basis of the recitation of Hallel at the Seder. So all four of these mini Haggadot are going to include retelling of the story. They are also going to include praise. The other elements we're going to see as we go through all four of them. So right at the beginning of the Seder, we have the Manash Tana. And questions are also an elemental part of the Seder. We're going to see how they appear throughout the rest of the Haggadah in hidden ways. But this first Haggadah of Haggadot, is the Haggadah, we call it, of Manash Tana. It starts with question. And then the answer to the question is the story, right? We orally, verbally tell the story of Avadim Hayinu Lefaro B'Mitzrayim. What I'll also do at the end, I see people are taking notes. I'm also happy to share this with you. So you could print this out if you want to share this idea at your Seder or just review it. So you'll have it. But of course, take notes. But the first Haggadah is the Haggadah where of Shmuel. We call it the Haggadah of Shmuel because we have this statement in the Talmud that we have to start with the negative, Matchil B'Gnut. And Shmuel says the Gnut, the negative we start with, is Avadim Hayinu. So we have a question, actually in this case, four questions. Manash Tana, really maybe one question in four parts. That's not our topic for this year, Manash Tana. Answer, telling the story of Avadim Hayinu. And then we have a very short thanksgiving. Blessed Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu, Baruch Shanatan Torah Liyamo Yisrael Baruch Hu, right? Blessed is the omnipresent one, blessed is he, et cetera, et cetera. So that's Haggadah number one. Question, answer in the form of retelling the story, and praise. I started out earlier, I mistakenly said four parts. It's not four parts, it's four Haggadot. Each of them have three parts. The second Haggadah, which is the Haggadah of Rav, also has questions. Those questions are the questions of the four Banim, the four sons. The answer to those questions are Rav's view that the negative element that we start with is Mitchila Ovde Avodah Zara Hayu Avotein, right? Originally, our ancestors were idol worshippers. And then it goes through the rest of the, then it continues up through Yetziat Mitzrayim as well. So we have element number one, questions. Element number two, telling the story by answering the question. And element number three is the thanksgiving. Baruch Shomer Haftachato LiYisrael Baruch Hu, right over here. Blessed is he who keeps his promise to Israel, blessed is he, for the Holy One, blessed be he, calculated the end of the bondage, etc. So very short as well, right? So we have Shmuel's Haggadah and Rav's Haggadah, basically very similar to each other in that they have questions, and the way that they tell the story is orally, by just retelling the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim. So the first two Haggadot are conceptually similar, but textually a little different. Okay, I want to stop there and see if there are any questions. If I was not clear, please let me know if anything requires any clarification. Okay, great. Haggadah number three. Here, it's not as clear, but once I saw it, it became sort of one of those obvious things. Haggadah number three, question, go forth and learn. What did Lavan the Aramean want to do to our father Jacob? Ma bikesh Lavan ha'arami lasot liyakov avinu? Question. And now the answer here is different. It's as a story, but this is the longest part of Maggid, where if you recall, we have a few words from a pasuk, and then words from other psukim to explain those psukim. So there, here already, we're not just retelling the story, we are engaging in in-depth Talmud Torah as a way of telling the story. As opposed to the first two Haggadot, where it was just a quick narrative, The third Haggadah, Haggadah number three, what starts with Mabikesh Lavan Ha'arami, that's the part of the Haggadah where, for example, we say, I'll just show you in the Haggadah so you'll get, it'll jog your memory. Okay? We start with a pasuk, Vayered Mitzrayimah, Anus al pi hadibur, Vayagar Sham, Milamed Shelo Yarad Yaakov Avinu Lishtakeh. Right? We break up the psukim that tell the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim, and we explain pasuk phrase by phrase what each thing means, what exactly happened in Mitzrayim. This is not just a parent telling a child a story. This is an in-depth engagement in midrashic explication of what happened in Mitzrayim. Vayareu otanu hamitzrim, the Egyptians were evil towards us, as it says, come let us deal cunningly with them, lest they multiply, and if war breaks out, right? We have psukim from Devarim, which are then explicated. We use psukim from Shemot to explain psukim from Devarim. So Haggadah number three, we talk about both physical and spiritual sort of down moments in our history, but we do it through an in-depth engagement with the text. So that's a conceptual difference between Haggadahs 1 and 2 and 3. 1 and 2 is a quick story. And the only reason that's different, it's because which negative aspect of Jewish history do we start with? And Haggadah number 3 has all the same elements, question, answer, but here it's Limud Torah. And finally, the praise is, and he became there a great nation. That's the physical praise. And the physical, the Lord took us out of Egypt. The Lord took us out of Egypt, not with a strong hand, not through wonders, not with an angel. And we have Thanksgiving, which is Dayenu, right? We have the end of the third Haggadah is the Thanksgiving is Dayenu, right? No matter what you would have done for us, God, it would have been wonderful. So again, same elements, conceptually different because this one is about Limud Torah. Okay, stop. I'm going to stop there. Any comments or questions? Okay, Haggadah number four. And by the way, now we should start thinking about the next question. Why do I need four Haggadahs in a Haggadah? Right, of all the elements would basically get me to the place where I fulfilled the mitzvah, which is to tell the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim, why do I need four of them? So think about that while we study Haggadah number four. Haggadah number four, again, now we know the pattern. We have to first identify questions. So these four questions are Rabban Gamliel Haya Omer, right? Anyone who has not said these three things has not fulfilled their obligation. And what are they? Pesach. What's the question? Pesach al shum ma. Why do I have a carbon Pesach? One question. Matzah al shum ma. Why do I have matzah? And maror al shum ma. Why do I have maror? So again, we have another group of questions, right? So now we've seen four groups of questions. Manishtana, the four children, and the third set of questions was Ma Bikesh Lavan Ha'arami, what did Lavan want to do? And now a fourth set of questions, Pesach, Matzah, and Maror al Shumma. And then we have an answer, because God passed over our forefathers, we have an answer for each one. We have an answer of why Karban Pesach, we have an answer of why Matzah, we have an answer of why Maror. And many people have a custom, right, to point or lift up the item at the Seder. And then what's the Thanksgiving? The end of the Haggadah. Lefichach anachnu chayavim lehodot, lehalel, leshabeach, lefa'er, lehomeim, lehader. The end of what we normally think is almost the end of Magid, but now we're seeing it's really the end of the fourth Magid. Because it's the fourth time we're praising God, not the first time we're praising God. Okay? Okay, so we have in the Haggadah, we've now quickly identified over the course of the Haggadah, four times where the same structure is found. Question? Answer? Thanksgiving. And the first two, and we also have an element of, in both of them, we have also elements of some physical, spiritual, also the also elements of praise, which are sprinkled in. But the three main elements are the ones that we've discussed. So the question is, why four? Now, before we answer that question, let's look at, I want to look at this breakdown in a diagram form. Okay, let me share the screen again. Okay, so this is a couple of pages from the Rav Yosef Tzvi Rimon Haggadah, which I highly recommend. It may be too late to get it this year. He has two Haggadot. He has one which is a commentary on the Haggadah and one which is a halachic discussion of all the mitzvot of Pesach. But he also, quoting Rabbi Gesundheit, notes that there are four Haggadot in one, and he breaks them out as follows. On the left, he calls it physical redemption, questions of physical nature, where we start off with the four questions, like we said, and then he breaks up into another one is spiritual. And that was the second one we saw, Mitchila Ovde Avodah Zarah Hayavotenu. Right, the first one is physical, Avadim Hayinu L'Parav Mitzrayim. The second Haggadah is spiritual, because the negative thing we start with is that, the first one is we were slaves to Paro, and then the second one is we were idol worshipers. Okay, that debate between Rav and Shmuel. And then, like I said, he also has this notion of after the questions comes the story. See here, key, question, story, and then thanks and praise. That's the first Haggadah. And the second Haggadah. The third Haggadah, let's talk this over. What's conceptually the difference between the first two Haggadot, where they have a simple storytelling, and the third Haggadah, where we tell the story through in-depth Torah study? Why do we change gears and have this other way of going about fulfilling the mitzvah of the night, from a simple story to an in-depth, almost Talmudic, midrashic discussion?
I guess I'll offer just a thought that if everybody needs to fulfill the mitzvah, then there's different opportunities or different ways to do that. And I would assume that you've got some people who are sitting around the table that hearing the story is exactly what they need. If they got into in-depth study, they wouldn't really necessarily connect to that. And I feel like that happens, you know, at my Seder from year to year anyway. You see people connecting with certain aspects of what's going on, and others kind of zone out at other times. So perhaps it's just the different opportunities to reach the different types of people who are sitting around the table.
Exactly, exactly. The first two, storytelling, but some people want something a little deeper, a little bit more conceptual or brainy, and so they want that type of approach, and that's what Rav Rimon calls study. And then we come to the fourth Haggadah. The fourth Haggadah is when we say Pesach al Shuma, Matzah al Shuma, Maror al Shuma, and just building on what Noah said there, it's almost like a show and tell, right? That's for the visual learner. right? I'm showing you, this is the matzah. This is the Karban Pesach, or represents the Karban Pesach. This is the maror. There are props, and we lift them, and we show them, and we touch them, and we smell them. That's for a different type of learner. That's what Rav Rimon calls realization presentation. So we have these four Haggadot, and now we understand why we have four Haggadot, right? We have four Haggadot because there are different types of learners. And in fact, if we look at the Rambam's description of the mitzvah, we see it. Mitzvah lehodia libanim v'afilu lo shalu shenemar v'gad l'bincha. It's our obligation to tell our children, even if they did not ask, as it says, and you shall tell your son. Lefi dato shel ben aviv melamdo. The father has to teach their son according to their ability. Ketzad, imaya katano tipesh omer lo b'ni kulanu hayinu avadim. If they're small or not so bright, or not so into the intellectual stuff, we just tell them a story. It's a great story. Kemo shifchazo, and by the way, he says, this is so interesting. We don't have this now, but the idea is fascinating. What, and it's also a little bit weird to think about it, we're celebrating our freedom, and how does the Rambam say is a good way to try to get across to their kid what it's like to be a slave? Point to your slave. Point to your servant. A father should teach his son according to his son's knowledge. How's it applied? If the son is young, my son and Israel are all slaves. Like this maidservant or this slave, which is like mind-blowing when you think, or you wonder what was going on at Rambam's table, and who did he have in his household? Did he have a slave at his household on the night when we are celebrating freeing our slaves? I'm going to leave that thought in your mind to think about. But what? I don't mean to belittle it, but this person is serving as a prop for the kid, right? So if they're smart, we tell them about it. If not, we got to show them, stuff at the table, which helps them understand. On this night, the Lord blessed, but he redeemed us and took us out to freedom. If the son is older and wise, he should inform what happened to us in Egypt and the miracles wrought for us by Moses, our teacher, everything according to the son's knowledge. So the Rambam stresses over and over again that the way we tell the story depends on the ability of the people around the table. So that makes perfect sense that as the Haggadah is being developed, right, that there are options now that we have. We have props, we have an in-depth Talmudic discussion, we have a quick story, we focus on the spiritual, we focus on the physical. There are so many different ways to fulfill this mitzvah in a fashion that we make sure that everyone around the table, like Noah is saying, gets what they need. And I mentioned this on Shabbat. At one point in our home, it felt like we were having different seders because Gabi and I would have to focus on the little ones and tell them the story in one way and put on a mask and bring out a fake frog and put some red dye in the water. And that was it for them. And then you had the kids who were in middle school and they needed something else. And then the kids who were in high school and so you go from group to group, hoping that no one, runs away or does anything dangerous while you're not paying attention to them. Right. And that's what's going on here. That's what the Rambam is saying. And that's what these four Haggadot are. So we have embedded in our Haggadah four of the very, very same model. Question, answer, praise. The praises are different, but they are essentially similar. The main difference is how is the question answered? In the first two, the question is answered by a simple story, but one focusing on the physical, one focusing on the spiritual. In the second, the answer is given through a more in-depth type of Torah study. And in the last one, it's simple with an added element of props and presentation. And for the reason Noah said. Okay. Yeah, go ahead, Noah.
It seems a little strange, the order, though. When you think about the props, I'm not saying that somebody who's a visual learner is a simple learner. I don't mean it that way. But it appears as if most people could get that type of picture when you're pointing to something and you're talking about it. Okay, and yeah, almost, or at least And I don't know, maybe it doesn't matter what the order is or why was this order chosen. If it turns out that these are really sort of four distinct Haggadot within the Haggadah.
Right. So let me just share with you this paragraph from Rabbi Gesundheit. We shall not simply accept the opinion that since the Haggadah is made up of several layers of text from different periods, psukim from Tanakh, sections from Mishnah, halachic and Arabic midrashim and prayers, and hymns, it's pointless to search for a coherent unified structure. And then he goes on, he finds the unified structure. But I think his point, I think your point is well taken. So put it first. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, I think that's part of what's going on here. So it could be at the end because it's a way to drag people back in, right? For the same reason why you're suggesting it could be at the beginning.
Right.
One could also suggest maybe that's at the end because you're losing people. And just when you're losing people, the props bring everyone back. It could be. Or you could also say, okay, if in your Seder it works differently, then do it at the beginning.
Sure. Okay.
Right. Also, like, for example, I could imagine you have small kids at the Seder. They're going to fall asleep in a half hour and lose interest. This is the part they like best. So do it. Maybe you'll do it again later. Okay, great. But maybe you won't do it again later. But you're going to move it just like you might move Dayenu because the kids want to sing Dayenu, but they're going to sleep. Just like you. So you move. I don't think there's an obligation to recite the Haggadah. I don't think it's an obligation to recite the whole Haggadah. And certainly there's no obligation to recite the whole Haggadah in order. So if that's what you think is going to, move you and then, or your guest, then, move it up. I also, I don't know what was going on at the Seders of, years back, but our Seders are often very diverse. We have lots of different types of people. I'll tell you just an interesting difference that I've seen in my lifetime. Like when I was young married and we had smaller kids. Okay, so the kids stayed up late and they had a horrible day the next day. All right, that was it. But that's the price you pay for having a Seder with the kids. I think now some parents, I think there's been a generational shift. And a lot of parents are like, and I've gotten, Rabbi, we have to start the Seder early. Because we're putting our kids to sleep at 7 o'clock. So what should we do? So we try to find out, you try to find the way to do it. But I say that to make the point that our Seders are very diverse. They have lots of different people there with lots of different considerations, lots of different priorities. And our goal is to fulfill the mitzvah of Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim. And there are different ways to skin that cat, so to speak. So let's move to one other piece, which I wanted to share with you, which I'll also, so let me, before everyone takes off, I'll put these documents in the chat so that you could look for them. But I'm looking now for a specific document. Let me stop the share. I'm looking for something, an old nostalgic document that I have that I want to share with you about the very question that I mentioned. About skipping and that whole question. Because I think it's really important to understand what's fundamental, what's not. Not because we want to skip for the sake of skipping, but we want to fulfill the mitzvah in a 100% kosher fashion and in a way that's going to address the needs of the people at the table and be relevant and meaningful. So they come back next year. Okay. So I wrote an email to Rabbi Saul Berman. This is probably 15 years ago, maybe more, asking him this question about what are the essential elements of the Seder? And this is his response to me. He really took a long time to respond, meaning he gave me a thorough response, is what I mean. So let's just go through it quickly, and I'll share it. There is no doubt that the mitzvah of the night can be fulfilled without the recitation of much of the Haggadah. When necessary, the following outline might serve as an appropriate consolidation. And that's the point, when necessary. Everyone has to figure it out. Kiddush is the first of the rabbinically required 4 cups of wine. So, of course, we have to say Kiddush. Karpas and Yachatz is at the stage for the 4 questions, which are essential element in the telling. Avadim Hayinu, 1 paragraph, which is Sipur number 1, which we already got to on our own. Physical enslavement and liberation. Then 1 other paragraph of Mitchila, Ovdei Avodah Zarah Yavotenu, which is the spiritual enslavement. And both of those are important elements of our history. Recitation of the 4 verses of Deuteronomy 26:5-8. Now, if you remember, that's what we called Haggadah 3. But what Rabbi Berman is saying is you could just do those psukim without all of the stuff that interrupts, that breaks them up. So that's 3 psukim, because it's a very short telling of the story. This is the elaboration required for either Sipur 1 or 2. The 10 plagues is an appropriate midrash reading to be interpolated into verses themselves, or Dayenu might be used for that purpose. Then Rabban Gamliel, which we also saw, Sipur number 3. We call that Sipur number 4, by the way. Verbal expression of the 3 d'oraita mitzvot, very important to talk about Pesach, Matzah, and Maror at the Seder. Opening 2 paragraphs of Hallel need to be read as the reenactment of Hallel in the Mikdash, which was recited during the Orphan Cover in Pesach. Asher Ga'alana, which is the bracha at the end. And then we continue with the rest of the Seder, the meal. But you see that Rabbi Berman has a significantly truncated option for Magid, which is the bulk of the, which is mostly the question for most of us, which is Magid, because that's what takes up the most time. So I'm going to put all of these things in the chat. And I'll give you all a few minutes to open them up on your computer, and then you're welcome to save them. So first comes the answer to the question that I sent Rabbi Berman. That's the first thing I'm going to share with everyone. So the first thing I shared was the shiur. Now comes Rabbi Berman's response to me in terms of the elements. Then I'm going to share a document which is called 4 Haggadot in 1, which are the notes that I used just for the shiur, for the discussion right now. Hold on 1 second. For some reason, it's not letting me. It's not letting me paste it in there. Ah, there we go. Okay. Okay, so 3 things. I shared the full shiur from Rabbi Gesundheit. The answers from Rabbi Berman, as well as the notes from my shiur. I could also share with you the
notes from your shiur. It didn't let us open it. It said we needed access.
Oh, okay. So let me change the settings there. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I'll change the settings and then you should be able to. Okay, that should work. Just let me know, Noah, please. And I'll make sure. Yeah.
That worked.
Okay, and the Rabbi Berman piece, I want to make sure that also is open. Yeah, okay. And I'll also share the diagram from Rav Rimon, because, like we've been saying, some people are visual learners, and why not? That, I think, I'm going to maybe I'm going to attach that. Can I attach that? Yeah, let me attach that right now. Yeah, okay, that should work too. Okay. Everyone have a chance to put those things, get those things on their own computer? Okay. All right. So that's the idea that we have. So tonight we try to accomplish two things. One is just to introduce maybe what was a new understanding of the structure of the Haggadah, that we fulfill the mitzvah of telling the story through questions, answers, and praise. We do it four times over the course of the night for pedagogical reasons. And also to share that there is some wiggle room and some leeway in terms of how to carry out one Seder. I shared some guidelines. If between now and the start of the Seder, if anyone has any specific questions like, Rabbi, must I say this? Can I skip this? Please don't hesitate to text me or call me. I'm putting my phone number in the chat. That's my cell number. And that way you'll be able to find me. Hold on 1 second. Okay, there you go. And that's it. Any questions or comments before we say goodnight? Yeah, Noah.
I have a question. I don't know if it's for this group or not, but I know that there was a comment, I guess, that maybe you had made, and maybe I missed the supporting documentation about being able to potentially start the Seder early, mm-hmm. as early as 7:52. I believe I saw that somewhere.
Yes. Let me share that document with you as well.
Thank you.
That had been, I think, sent out to the Tehillah.
Okay. Yeah.
But sometimes it's hard to keep track of everything.
I couldn't find it in the inbox. So
let me okay. So here it is. And I will share it again with you. I'm a little temperamental here in terms of what it lets me share, what it doesn't let me share. Let me try again. Yeah, okay. Just try that. It's a very, very valuable document. Yeah, I see a few people just got on there. Great. Just a moment. Okay, so hold on to those. If you misplace them, don't hesitate to send me a note, and I'll be happy to share them with you all. Any other comments or questions? No? Okay, so everyone, I wish you all a beautiful and redemptive and enjoyable Pesach. I hope your Seders are full of stories, tell lots of stories, and full of laughter and fun and holiness and good wine. And I'll miss being with you all, but who knows what Lashana Haba brings, right? We say that at the end of the Seder, so who knows? So yeah, Chag Sameach, Chag Kasher V'Sameach, Be in touch if you have any questions between now and the start of Pesach. But please note, I will be in New York 2 hours ahead of you. So if you text me at 6:30 your time, you're going to be out of luck. You have to find another rabbi in Mountain Time. So keep the time difference in mind. All right, all the best, everyone. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
And have a good night.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you so much.